Hey, I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, where we're going to be talking to faith-based leaders here in Wisconsin who are standing up to Trump's authoritarianism and his anti-immigrant policies. With me to delve into this issue right now is the Reverend Dr. Kerry Parker, who's the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Council of Churches, a post she's held since 2017. Reverend Dr. Parker, thanks for being on the Wisconsin Forward podcast with me.
It is great to be with you.
Tell me, how do you see the role of the Wisconsin Council of Churches at this really dicey moment for our country?
We are here to connect and inspire folks. We are here to backstop them and remind them that they are not in this alone. I tell our staff every day, the most important thing you do is leave folks with the feeling that they are not alone.
So important, because if you were an undocumented person in the United States right now, I can only imagine how scary and lonely this moment is.
Absolutely. The powers that be, you know, in Christian lingo, we talk about the principalities and powers. The powers that be want you to feel alone. They want to fracture us and divide us. And the more we can stay connected and stay connected across differences, the more we remember our own power.
How do you deal with this crackdown? I don't like that word, on this scapegoating of immigrants. And you've written about the imperative to protest Trump's policies that are scapegoating immigrants. What do you think is going on there? And how do you preach about this, or how do you comfort people about this?
Well, authoritarianism thrives on creating another, right? They have to create a scapegoat. And my faith teaches me love of neighbor, love of self, love of God. And all of those things operate in tandem. They're all intertwined with one another. So it becomes as if there is no other. So there's no someone else's child. There's no someone else out there. The coat I have in my closet that I'm not using belongs to the person who needs it. All of these things are part and parcel of one another, of care for the community, care for self, and care for Jesus.
And the idea that you should welcome the stranger into your home.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't seem, I don't know what Bible these folks are reading, but that's not what the teaching is. It's so contrary to the teaching of welcoming the stranger, you know, treating everyone like you'd be treated yourself.
Right. I mean, folks who have come here to the U.S., no matter what status they have come under, are part of our community. They're part of our economy. They're part of our neighborhoods, our churches. They go to the same schools, libraries, gas stations, grocery stores. And they deserve the same respect as any other neighbor.
So important. At the Wisconsin Council of Churches, you've joined a lawsuit against the Trump administration because it's no longer keeping places of worship off limits from immigration raids. Why was that important to you?
Oh, that's right. We are one of four lawsuits now on this. We are part of the Mennonite Church USA lawsuit. And we're one of 27 parties, I think, that are plaintiffs in that lawsuit. And this was important to us because so many of our member traditions were started because of government overreach and not wanting government and church to be entangled. And we looked at this revised policy by DHS and said, if our line is not government coming into our places of worship to potentially drag out our neighbors and friends and fellow congregants, what is our line going to be? And so we voted unanimously on a board level, on a staff level. This is what we needed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. And what's the consequences if ICE starts going into churches and synagogues and mosques and dragging people out?
Well, we already see consequences. People are afraid to go to worship. People are afraid to seek out services that are happening through churches. People are afraid to seek out spiritual enrichment and pastoral care. And things like getting groceries from food pantries, seeking mental health assistance, taking their children to fellowship activities. All of these things are places that people are pulling back from, and they deter from building community.
And really impairs their quality of life, too.
Very much so. Again, it goes back to that isolation.
Here's a question for you. We're super polarized right now in this country. You're head of the Wisconsin Council of Churches. How do you talk to other faith leaders who don't agree with you on some of these political issues?
Oh, we do it all the time. We connect 23 different Christian traditions. And if you think everybody agrees on everything, oh my goodness. Not only that, but people within any one of those traditions don't agree on everything. And the important thing is to look behind the political position statements and look at the core values. What is animating us? What are we leaning on? Because so many times we go into these well-trod political arguments as our first position. And we've been taught by media, no offense, we've been taught by media, we've been taught by politicians, we've been taught by demagogues to go down these paths as if we don't have to think about it. It just comes straight from the gut, straight from the lizard brain. And don't think about it, just go. And what happens if we lean into faith and teaching and consideration and actually take time to think through what we're talking about and what we might have in common? Sometimes the middle ground is not at 50%, but it's going deeper instead of going towards the middle.
And what's the possibility of bringing people around, do you think?
I think it's long work. It's not fast work. It is long work, and it's about getting people to see the humanity of the other.
I was speaking to a reverend the other day who mentioned Martin Marty, who was a faith leader in the Chicago area and who was very liberal. And he was asked by a friend, what do your parishioners who don't agree with you, how do they deal with you? And he said, well, they see me comfort them in the hospital, comfort them in the home after a tragedy. And they appreciate that part of me. And so I can be different from them politically, but still they are open to me. And it seems to me you as a faith leader, Reverend Dr. Parker, you have that capacity. And I'm sure you're doing that too, not just with other faith leaders, but when you're in parish.
It really does come down to compassion. I was a parish pastor before I came to this role on the council. And so it helps me speaking with parish pastors to say, I know how hard this is. And you need to earn the ability to have hard conversations with people because you've already shown that you love them and you see their struggles. And it is not prophetic preaching and prophetic teaching against a pastoral presence. It is both of them together.
And it's not just, trying to beat them in an argument or say, look at this, read this article and that one. And that's not what brings people around, really.
Oh, heavens no. You can't preach at people and expect anybody to come to your position. This isn't a logical proposition. This is about matters of the heart and matters of the faith. And, again, coming from a Christian position, it's looking at the models that Jesus had for us and how he sat with people and he cared for them and he shared meals and he was in dialogue. not having a monologue at people all the time. And that's really an important lesson to learn.
Yeah. Screaming at people isn't going to work. That's for sure.
Nope.
How do you sustain hope in this period?
By praying with people and singing with people. One of the privileges of my job is getting to church all over the state and with folks from lots of different traditions, and being able to see faithful folks continuing to come together and being the best of what they can be in the face of so many challenges. There's this great song that comes from resistance traditions called How Can I Keep From Singing? And when tyrants tremble, sick with fear is one of the lines from that.
Oh, that's great.
Right? And there's so many songs like this that you can just feel people's spirits rise when they sing songs like that. And every time you can just feel the room rise. And just this little extra bit of hope, no matter what they're going to go from that room in here or experience, for just a few minutes, they have been in community in their, they have been attuned to one another and to the divine.
Oh, I love that. Resistance songs, too, bringing people together.
Yep.
The Reverend Dr. Parker is the Executive Director at the Wisconsin Council of Churches. Thanks so much for being my guest on this podcast. Wish you all the best. Love hearing from you.
Thank you so much.
Joining me now on the Wisconsin Forward podcast is an old friend and colleague, Rabbi Bonnie Margulies, who for many years was the tireless executive director of Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice. Rabbi Bonnie is now the director of Hillel and Jewish Life at Trinity College in Connecticut. Rabbi Bonnie, welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Hey, Matt. Thanks so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's great to be in conversation with you again. As a rabbi and a person of faith and conscience, how are you grappling with where we are as a country right now?
As a human being, I wake up every day with a knot in my stomach.
Yeah.
And I go to bed every night with a knot in my stomach. I think what the moment we are in is terrifying as a human being. It is terrifying as a woman. It is terrifying as a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
As a faith leader, it is also a call to action. As you know, my rabbinate has always been a social justice rabbinate, and I've always felt called to action. But in this time of all times, it is so critical that we hear the faith community speaking out. And I'm grateful for so many of my colleagues who have been speaking out in the pulpit, in the public sphere, in the media. We need those moral voices and that moral clarity today.
Absolutely. And tell us what there is in the Jewish tradition that instructs us about how to react to Trump's scapegoating of immigrants and his racism and some of his other horrendous policies.
You know, we always go back to the most foundational text, which is right there in the first chapter of Genesis. God says, let us make human beings in our image. And the rabbis of Jewish tradition have always interpreted that to mean God doesn't have an image. So what does that mean, that we're made in God's image? It means that we all have God within us. We all have those God-like attributes. And so as God is merciful, we need to be merciful. As God is just, we need to be just. As God is compassionate, we need to be compassionate. And then the Torah goes on to make clear throughout the text what that means. 36 times the Torah tells us, treat the stranger among you the same as the citizen. A dictate that is being violated right, left, and center every day by Trump and his cronies. And it is horrifying. But what he is doing to our country is horrifying. You know, I've heard it said that Judaism doesn't talk about democracy, but that's not really true, because there are many instances throughout the biblical text and throughout Jewish history where we are admonished that our leaders must have the assent of those that they lead. They can't lead by fiat. And actually, in the book of Samuel, when the people call out to the prophet Samuel that they want a king, because they want to be like the other nations of the world that have kings, Samuel says, you don't want a king. Kings are bad. Mm. Kings are going to tax you, and kings are going to basically enslave you to build their palaces. And that's what we're seeing. We're being taxed through tariffs. We're being taxed through this big, horrendous bill, which is giving tax breaks to the wealthy and increasing taxes on those who can't afford it. And we're being enslaved in detention camps where immigrants, whether they are undocumented or here legally, are being whisked off to without due process, without access to lawyers, without anybody even really knowing where they are. I mean, I obviously I could go on,
yeah,
but we have limited time. So.
No, I'm glad you have spelled it out. And the passage that rings in my ear always is justice, justice, justice shall you pursue. And of course, Trump is pursuing the opposite of justice in every realm that you can look at. How do you have a dialogue with members of the Jewish community who don't recognize the dangers that Trump represents or who actually support him?
Well, for one thing, I'm happy to say that the majority of the American Jewish community is not in support of Donald Trump and his policies and are appalled by Project 2025, by these efforts to enshrine white Christian nationalism into our government and into our laws and into our structures. So the vast majority of the American Jewish community understands the danger that we are in. I had members, this past year I was the interim rabbi at a small congregation in Wisconsin, and I had members of my congregation who were either Trump supporters or who had different political views from mine. And at the end of the year, I wrote to one of my congregants and I said, you know, you've been lovely all year. You've been sweet. You've been wonderful. You've been supportive. And I know that we don't agree politically. And he wrote back to me, of course, all of my sermons and talks and everything had a social justice point to them because that's what I do. And he said, you know, we don't agree politically, but you opened my eyes to other perspectives and to a different point of view. And if I can do that, you know, that's amazing. And so worthwhile. You know, so often we say we're not speaking to the extremes on either end. We're speaking to the undecided middle or the uninformed middle. But we have to also recognize that sometimes it is possible to get even those on the extreme right to hear you and to perhaps be open to a different way of looking at things.
Yeah, I'm always trying to open conversations with people. I think it's really important. You know, I'm thinking back, Rabbi Bonnie, to the civil rights movement when we saw Jewish leaders like Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel walking arm in arm, hand in hand with Martin Luther King. Do you see a similar interfaith resistance movement taking shape right now?
I do. Actually, I was on a webinar yesterday with the Interfaith Alliance. And that's what everybody was talking about was the effort to build or rebuild coalitions across different faith communities to stand up to this moment and to this movement. And I do see it happening. It's interfaith work has been very fraught and very difficult over the last couple of years, but I think people are responding to the emergency of this moment and recognizing that we aren't always going to agree on everything, and that has always been true. But this isn't the time to worry about our own personal interfaith internal disagreements. We have to stand together as a faith community and provide that moral prophetic voice in this moment.
How do you comfort people in this period who are seeing what Trump is doing to our country, who are worried about fascism in the United States, as I am?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it's a terrifying moment that we're in. And, you know, I read so many different political analysts, Robert Reich and Heather Cox Richardson and, you know, so many others. And I'm really heartened by the way that they hold on to hope. It's going to get worse before it gets better, but there does seem to be for the future. And we have to hold on to that hope. And we have to also, you know, hold on to what Joe Hill said to his father, right? Don't mourn, organize. And that's the antidote to despair is hope and action. When we're taking action, we know that we're moving the needle even a little bit.
Rabbi Bonnie Margulies has been my guest on this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast. Rabbi Bonnie, I wish you all the luck in your new job.
Thank you, Matt. And I'm so glad that you are flunked retirement, as so many of my friends have done, and are back at the mic.
Well, I'm going to retire at some point, but I can't retire right now. It's just too dicey out there.
Too much going on.
Yeah. Joining me now on this Wisconsin Forward podcast is another old friend of mine, the Reverend Walter Jack Lanier, senior pastor at the Progressive Baptist Church in Milwaukee. Pastor Lanier, welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Thank you. Always great to be with you, Matt.
Oh, likewise. Let me just start very big picture. Where are we as a country right now?
We're in a crisis is an understatement. Somewhere between crisis and chaos is where we are. The volume of chaos is so intense. It's difficult for the everyday person to keep up. I don't think we've ever seen this particular type of chaos from the government, where you had a strong man, and I'll say an evil man, and an incompetent man, and minions.
You call Trump an evil man. Explain that.
He does intentional harm to people. It is different. I have, as you do, friends and associates in all ranges of the political spectrum, and the consequences of policies can do harm. That's one thing, but it's different to be indifferent and seemingly to take satisfaction in harming people. I go all the way back. What pops in my mind now was dividing up families at the border back in the first presidency, the first traumatic experience, you know, an indifference and a satisfaction in harming people and gaslighting people and incarcerating people, bullying people. So that's different. That's of a different character than political disagreement. That's different. That's an indifference at best. That's probably the kindest thing we could say. He appears to be indifferent, but it's not. It's malice. And that's his history. And so that's evil.
The intent to commit harm. And actually, as you point out, the delight in taking harm, there is a kind of sadism there.
That's who he is. It's who he is. Satisfaction in harming people, putting them on the defensive, marginalizing, characterizing, caricaturing. All of that. It's nasty. Predictable, not at the scale that it's at, that there'd be significant backlash from the Obama presidency. You know, that just stirred up some feelings in people, and they came to the surface, and then they manifested in the form of Trump won. So that's the kind of the historical, but the policy and the ease with which he's doing it is more than frightening. And the fact that the collective, we do not have an organized institutional pushback, not that there's none, but there's not enough against this wave is frightening. It's not surprising because he's always had that anti-Black bent in his being, but getting to the power seat and then doing what was predictable. And that's how it is when you're dealing with somebody who's, you know, I said evil, I'll stand on that, who's evil. It's different. Because when somebody like that, it's like the kid in the Game of Thrones, Joffrey, the little son who was just evil. He got in power and just did obscene stuff. So we do not have the organized mechanisms against that I wish that we would, whether that's party, legal, economic. It's a challenge. So it's tough. I stew on it quite a bit about who should be doing what? What can we be doing to fight back, to push back, to hold the line?
You've stressed, and you're stressing right now, the importance mm-hmm. of coming together, of making alliances, of uniting the many different groups and leaders mm-hmm. that are trying to combat Trump and Trumpism. How mm-hmm. is that going for you?
It is challenging. The desire is there. The interest is there. The organizing is late, if you will, relative to where we are on the journey. So there's organizing taking place cross-culturally, cross-denominationally. That's there. The desire is there. There's people on the side of justice, on the side of righteousness, on the side of looking out for the least of these. But scaling up is tough, one. And two, when you talk about Wisconsin and southeastern Wisconsin, because we have the long history of segregation, our systemic responses are not as strong as they could be if we had, you know, been organized sooner or had a longer and deeper history of working cross-culturally, cross-denominationally. I think that we have to recognize what we have the capacity to do. In my brain, Matt, I'm thinking that we need to talk about what it means to Trump-proof Wisconsin.
And are you getting support from interfaith leaders in the southeastern Wisconsin area on this?
Yes. I mean, folks are active, taking stands against Christian nationalism, against extremism, immigration, legal cases. So there's stuff going on. But it's he's not easy to it. He and it and evil and greed is not easy to fight.
No. And you mentioned Christian nationalism as a leader in the Christian community in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. You must encounter Christian nationalists. How do you have conversation with those folks? How do you try to bring people around? What's that like?
I don't. Others do. Let me be clear on what I'm saying here. You know, there's a limited amount of time in the day. We all know that. And some people have that as their particular area of interest. So I support all efforts to speak out against Christian nationalism. I'm not in converting mode. I'm in organizing mode. So I'm continuously looking for the willing people that I can organize with.
You know, we started big picture. I kind of want to end big picture.
Yeah.
How do you buttress people's spirits in this very alarming time? Or put it another way, how are we going to get through this?
Well, you know, that's a great question. First of all, as a man of faith, as a person of faith, that's where I start. So I still I'm deeply faithful, and I'm thankful to be a person of faith now. So I'm grounded. I know, you know, one of our colloquialisms in the church is "This too shall pass." But this is tough because all of the institutions that we would have thought would have held ground or pushed back, Supreme Court capitulating, Justice Roberts capitulating, Congress soft. So the essence of the three branches of government, you know, are waxing and waning. But I thought this during the first administration. You know, there's this theory about democracy, about the United States, about the greater good, about, you know, people who really love their country, you know, waiting for them to step in somewhere to say this is un-American, because it really is. You know, this is the, I call the folks on January 6th the worst Americans. Mm-hmm. And when they were celebrated and then ultimately pardoned, you know, that's just different. You know, Richard Nixon stepped down. Mm-hmm. This guy got more powerful and stepped in. So I'm just standing on hope. The one thing I do think about that has really started to kind of churn in my being is the multiracial coalitions of the past. And in the past, they were just that, coalitions pushing back against violence and oppression. But now when I've not really, really started to think about the United States as a multiracial country, and this being the last dying gasp of white supremacist thought and being, and that as we learn how to lead together. So I think that is actually my answer to your question. I think that will be the shift. That won't be neat and tidy. It'll be messy as democracy is, but it will also be representative of the majority of the country. And as we learn to do that more effectively together, I think that is likely, that's the most likely path for this country, is really multiracial coalitions. Everybody will still have, you know, Black self-interest, Hispanic self-interest, LGBTQ self-interest, white self-interest, women's self-interest, but how do we really learn how to work together? Because it's the opposite of that that has us where we are. The seeds of division are so easily sown. So I think, actually, I think that's it. That's what I think has to happen.
Well, and I hope you're right that this is the last dying gasp of white supremacy in America. Sure hope so. Pastor Lanier, thanks so much for your inspiring thoughts and for being on the Wisconsin Forward podcast with me.
Yep, great to be here.
All right, let's get together soon. My next guest is the Reverend David Cooper, who for the past 32 years has been an Episcopalian priest right here in Wisconsin. Before that, he was the police chief in Madison for many, many years, where he had photos of Martin Luther King and Gandhi behind his desk. I don't think there was any other police chief in America who did that. Reverend Cooper, thanks for being on the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
My pleasure to be back here again.
Hey, on August 2nd here in Madison, you led a faith-based Christian rally up State Street to the Capitol to protest against white nationalism and Trump's authoritarianism and his cruel policy toward immigrants, among other bad policies. Why was that important for you to do?
Well, does it get any more important than that? And I don't care if you're a person of faith or you're a person of integrity, because anybody should be absolutely perplexed, outraged.
This was an explicitly Christian. I'm not Christian, but it was carry the cross. You were carrying a huge wooden cross, you and several other of the leaders of this rally. Mm-hmm. And so what about your Christian faith impelled you to do this?
Well, it's because I think people are misunderstanding. I think a lot of what Christianity is all about. I think, you know, even the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church recently said, and it is true if you look back historically, that many of our presidents were Episcopalians. And he said, we can no longer be the Church of Presidents. We will become an engine of resistance. Hmm. And that's a clarion call, that I think, to what the teachings of Jesus are all about, and certainly reinforced by the Hebrew Bible as well, that this is who we are. We protect people who come to our country. People have asked me, well, where did you get that idea about immigrants? Well, read the Bible. You know, if there's anything central in certainly Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, it's the welcoming the stranger, for we could once be strangers and we could once be in need of shelter and food and clothing. And then I think, you know, my Christianity is based on the 25th chapter of Matthew's gospel, when he tells the story about a very powerful person, that person questions, said, look, at where were you when I was in need of clothing and drink and food and shelter? And when did you visit me when I was sick? And they said, we certainly would have done that. And then the punchline of the parable is, when you do this, if the least of those people among us, then you do it for all of us and for me. And it's very, very personal. So if we talk about helping people, in my brand of Christianity, it's helping people who are vulnerable, because that's what Jesus told us, and that's what it's all about. It's not about being amongst the powerful.
One of the reasons for the march was to protest against white Christian nationalism. What is it about white Christian nationalism that's Christian.
That's right. That's right. It isn't. It's a form of what you believe to be patriotic, and you take sort of like cherry picking the things that you like in your in your Bible. I think we have to really focus on what the story of the Bible is about. It's a love story, and you take little pieces of it, it doesn't fit very well. And Jesus came, and I think many of the late term Hebrew prophets as well said was very much against a state that persecuted people.
Right.
Yeah.
What has been the reaction to your march from other religious folks?
Well, what I thought was leaders that would be supporting us, and they weren't there. So this turned out to be. And a great lesson for me, because I had four wonderful people that I was working with since spring, putting together this Here We Stand document about, who really are we? What do we stand up for? And I think it was really spirit-infused. This whole thing was beyond my hopes and dreams, I'll have to tell you. I thought maybe if we're lucky, we're going to get 20 people come up. And that's why I put a lot of pressure on 20 people I personally knew. I'll have to admit they didn't all jump up. Hey, this is a great idea, David. When can we be there? I heard back from about four or five, okay?
You put the arm on me, I know.
That's
that.
Right, that's right. So I put the arm on you. And so it wasn't intended to be interfaith now. It was intended to be Christians who are safe now, safe in this society. White Christians are pretty safe here, that we could go out and protest. And I would not expect my brothers and sisters of color to do this today or of different religious faiths because it's dangerous.
And, there were more than 20 people there. I think there were 300 at the start and more than twice that at the end.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say in my experiences with crowds over the years and hundreds of demonstrations on State Street, we probably had between 400 and 500 there. Right. And, the silent procession was very important. The huge, heavy 200-plus brown cross, absolutely essential, not some little flimsy cross. And then asking folks to sign the cross and to have some songs on there, that we shall overcome. And if I were a bell, I'd ring it in the morning. And it was a great experience. I think the thing that I carried away with most, people came up to me and said they had been on anti-war marches and they had been on anti-racism and civil rights marches, but they'd never stood up for their faith before in a public setting. And I thought, yeah, that's it. People are kind of embarrassed. Why? Because most people think Christians are mean-spirited, homophobic, just
anti-abortion,
just judgmental people. And why would we want to have anything to do with them?
Yeah, I was surprised and pleased to see members of other faiths. I was walking down with a Lutheran minister, and there was a group of Mennonites, Mennonites for Peace, yes. Mennonites for Justice.
Yes.
It was really thrilling to be there. Yeah, and I'm an atheist Jew, and I was inviting other people who weren't Christian to be there just because it was so important to stand up against this authoritarianism.
Absolutely. I mean, I even had a call from a young man. He called me. He said, I'm with the Madison Neo-Pagans. I said, great. So, is it okay if we come and walk with you? I said, absolutely. Absolutely. And they showed up. Now, people might become outraged at that and everything, but, who has it said, unless we learn to live together, we're going to die together, or die separately. I think it was Dr. King said something like that. That the whole, our whole future, I think, as a country and as a world, is to be lovingly tolerant of other people who don't think exactly the same way you do.
And how are we going to get there? How are we going to get through this really tough period?
We're going to have to resist, and we have to resist nonviolently, and then we're going to have to all stand up, and we're probably going to have to hurt the billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going to probably have to shut the economy down and say, unless you change, unless you give us back our rights and our aid to needy people in the world and health care for all of us, and a decent wage, we're not going to do this anymore.
Well, I'm grateful for your leadership on that protest and your leadership, your many years with the church and your many years at the police department here in Madison, Wisconsin. Reverend Cooper, thanks for being my guest on this Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Nice talking with you, John.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Wisconsin Forward podcast. I'm Matt Rothschild, and thanks for listening. I also want to thank all my guests, the Reverend Dr. Kerry Parker, Rabbi Bonnie Margulies, Pastor Walter Jack Lanier, and the Reverend David Cooper, who we just heard from. Also want to thank Dom Lee, doing terrific editing and engineering for this episode. And I also want to thank Civic Media for giving me this opportunity to share what I know and what my guests know in this very difficult time. Please stay tuned for the next Wisconsin Forward episode. I'll be talking with Dan Schaefer of Civic Media in the recombobulation area about the upcoming governor's race, especially the primary, among the Democrats. You're not going to want to miss that.